With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared create collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview on Face to Face is with Heather White. We're going to be talking about her new film, Complicit, but we talk about so much more than that. You've noticed I've started to focus on filmmakers more and more on Face to Face, but I think there's a reason for that. Filmmakers are storytellers. They're concerned about the human condition. They are thinking about the implications of what it means to get involved, about the splash and ripple effect, and so on. And so Heather today talks about all of those things, including her film. We talk about global brands and sweatshops. We talk about the anti-sweatshop campaign and the anti-globalization movement. What a mega factory actually is. What does it mean to fight back and to speak truth to power? And what is it that consumers can do? How do we get involved? How do we deal with the fact that there does seem to be this thing out there called greed, corporate greed, individual greed, collective greed that seems to be affecting the way we live and the way we live and interact with others. And there are implications to all of these things, to the purchases we make, to the decisions that we come to, and the choices, choice, freedom, choice, and responsibility, it seems to me, is really what it's all about. So Heather talks about her film Complicit and all of that. Don't forget there are plenty of more interviews where this one came from on facetofacelive.ca, our new website. You can support the podcasting that I do through patreon.com, and don't forget rabble.ca as well for more information there about podcasting. And stay tuned. Heather White coming right up. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by another very special guest here today. Heather White is joining us, I think, from New York, but I'm not quite sure. Heather, thank you so much for taking the time to spend with me here on the phone today.
Thank you, David.
We're going to be talking about your new film that you co-directed with Lin Zhang called Complicit. And what little conversation we've had, you're just sort of coming off of a pretty robust long world tour by the sounds of it.
Well, I didn't do Asia or Australia on this trip, but I was over in Europe for 5 weeks with the world premiere of the film in London, and then we went to Geneva and had a couple of other screenings after that. So it was just a wonderful culmination of 4.5 years working on the project, and to be able to have our premieres over in Europe, where we had the majority of our funding actually came from UK and European donors and foundations.
And that's really interesting. We might have to ask a little bit more about that. You raised a fair bit of money on Indiegogo as well, did you not?
Yes, we raised about $43,000 on the site, and then for people who wanted to make tax-deductible donations, we raised another $5,000 or $6,000 on another site during the campaign. So yes, we've met our goals, and we're so thankful that we were able to then use the funds immediately to be able to get through production.
So many questions for you, Heather. The film for me, first of all, congratulations on all of it. I mean, what a crazy Indiegogo campaign, and so successful and just so encouraging, I would like to think, for other filmmakers out there as well. How do you land? How do you land on a story like this? What is it? An article that you read? Is it a conversation you have? What draws you in?
I've been working on anti-sweatshop and globalization issues for at least 15 years.
Wow.
I ran a nonprofit that I started called Verite that's based in Amherst, Massachusetts. And Verite was set up to inspect factories looking at compliance with labor practices and conditions and local labor laws, basically for global brands that are producing in developing countries, often high-risk environments where there have been allegations of child labor or trafficked labor or excessive work hours, that sort of thing.
I'd right. been
a sourcing agent for companies doing business in China for several years before that, and with the rise of increased reports of industrial fires and people dying and, you know, all these accidents in China in particular in the mid-90s, I decided I would start a nonprofit organization to monitor and try to provide some solutions. So I did that for several years and then was working as a research fellow at Harvard on some issues related to corruption and
right.
conflicts of interest in this whole independent monitoring sector that's been developing over the last 10 years or so. But there's some challenges around, are they really independent? What's the level of transparency? That sort of thing. And that led to my getting a book contract to go to China and follow up on, as you suggested, a newspaper article that I'd read.
Okay.
Quite a while back that said that the Chinese government was forced to set up clinics to deal with young people who were getting poisoned in factories making for global brands, for companies that were producing for export, but the factories weren't paying the workers
and
medical
expenses. And Heather, this is all primarily electronics.
The newspaper article that I read was focusing on workers in a number of sectors. They didn't focus on electronics. So I had no idea what I was going to find when I got to China and went to some of these occupational disease clinics and found that they had surveillance cameras in the patients' rooms in some cases.
Wow.
And we would get chased out of there by nurses and security guards and other instances. So it was quite an interesting introduction to seeing what is going on right now with occupational injuries and disease related to global brands that are producing in the Pearl River Delta. But what we found, as you said, was primarily that the young workers, the teenagers that we met, almost all of them were working in electronics factories and had some connection to the major brands that we're using every day, you know, our smartphones, tablets, devices, et cetera. They're all electronics factories, all in that region.
A million workers employed by Foxconn.
Yes.
It's astounding when you think of the splash and ripple effect for not for good but for potentially for ill.
Absolutely, and in the case of Foxconn, they're part of a new phenomenon of what I call mega factories, where they have over 100,000 workers in one campus, as they're called. They're not really campuses like you see here at Google or, you know, the companies in Silicon Valley that are spending millions of dollars just to create comfortable work environments where workers never want to go home.
That's
and they
right.
want to take all their meals there, and they can even sleep there and, you know, and take yoga classes.
Yes.
The
Maybe get a massage before they leave at the end of the day.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. This is not the same type of environment, although it has to be said that some have reported that there are basketball courts and the occasional swimming pool and some recreational facilities at the factories in China as they try to emulate what's going on in the West. But often there aren't that many people able to partake of the off work activities and the recreational bowling alleys, et cetera, because they're putting in 6 days a week and often in excess of 12 hours a day.
And is it 160,000 workers, did I hear, in the film per day?
160,000 workers per day.
At a given time, like there's all these shifts. And I mean, I think at one point in the film, it's quite astounding the way you represent it and shoot it. But there's just this steady flow of traffic, of people coming and going. And it's this massive, campus, as you say.
Oh, yes. The couple of campuses that we filmed on the periphery of, we didn't get to go inside because we weren't representing anybody that they would let in, had between 200,000 and 300,000 workers.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. It's where do you even begin? You know?
Well, one of the first things you see is that there's a police station at the gates of the factories, the largest ones, because rather than employ their own security guards, as most factories do, they choose to make deals with local police departments, and they have police right there so that if workers complain about maybe getting underpaid or they're not satisfied with something related to their shift, the police are called and they get taken right to jail.
So crowd control.
Yes, crowd control, and just to shut down any possibility of a labor action or a strike, if there's a chance of them shutting it down. But in China, they're seeing a lot of strikes and labor actions. Now, even the government admits that they're experiencing over 50,000 a year. So,
wow.
As you can imagine, workers are not satisfied in many situations.
Well, you're starting to hear about it more and more all the time. I mean, just even a few days ago, I believe, coming out of Shanghai, a report about some disappearance of three labor activists. Have you heard about this?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I'm familiar with
that
organization, which is actually based in New York, China Labor Watch, and their executive director, Li Chang, has been talking to the New York Times and others now about it, because they were a team of three that had been working undercover, doing some investigations, looking at the workplace conditions of Ivanka Trump.
That's right.
Wear line.
Yeah, yeah. One arrested, two missing, I think, still.
Yes.
So, Heather, is this so many entry points? Is this a human rights conversation? Is this about speaking truth to power? Is this capitalism going sideways or just never going to be quite right? Are we seeing the uglier parts of capitalism here? I mean, there's really many interesting lines in the film, but one of the owners, I don't know where you got some of your footage, but the undercover stuff. One of the owners, I'm assuming, or manager, says the Chinese market is messy but highly specialized, and I couldn't help but kind of laugh out loud at the irony.
Yes, and in answer to your question, I have to say that it's all of the.
Yeah, of course,
all,
it is.
All of it.
Yeah,
I figured that's what, simultaneously.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I figured that's what you would say. Where? What is it about this, the newspaper article, going to China, what was your line? I had no idea what I was going to find. What did you think you were going to find? Was there an expectation there?
I was not assuming that I was going to find, 10 years after the article appeared or more, that there were so many young people and young workers that would qualify as child labor. Who were injured and had been poisoned by N-hexane, which is a neurological toxin that a lot of them had been working with as an aspect of the polishing of smartphones, the touch screens. As they moved their way, down the assembly line, the youngest workers, the least skilled workers in the factories are basically put to work wiping stuff. And what they need to wipe are the touch screens and the housings and the components, the plastic parts that are going to move through the line. And they need to be absolutely dust-free, and they need to be, free of any little bits of wire or small parts. So the kids are basically sitting with small bottles all day long and wiping 700 to 800
screens a day.
Screens, as we talk about in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And there are environments where there might not be any windows open because they're trying to keep a clean environment.
Right.
And southern China's not a very clean place, just in general, in terms of the quality of the air, et cetera. So I understand why they might not choose to just have open windows with breezes coming in. But at the same time, then they don't provide adequate ventilation, hoods, fans, et cetera, which is a necessity in order to make sure that these chemicals are not just breathed in by the workers for the entirety of their shifts. In the case of the teenagers that we interviewed who were part of a group of 39, they'd only been working in the factory about 3 months in most cases.
Well.
And they became completely paralyzed and were in the hospital for 2 years.
We see an Asian reporter, a variety of reporters throughout the film, journalists and so on, but the one in particular saying, as he's reporting on a particular news story, asked the question, is money more important than human lives? So, you know, I think most of us would probably answer that question pretty quickly and say, no, of course not. But when you I mean, this isn't just happening in China, right? I mean, this is you've been working in this field for many, many years. This is something that's happening globally, is it not?
Yes, I was just on a television program a couple of months back discussing the state of child labor in the leather industry in India and the tanning factories, the tanneries that are serving the leather production for a lot of the footwear companies that have, you know, all the brand names that we're familiar with, and they also make sports shoes, et cetera.
Right.
But this is something that one would have thought would have been addressed over the last 15 years of people talking about codes of conduct and social compliance becoming a responsibility of brands, and they have created websites and they've joined various associations, but in fact the situations are still very problematic and kids are still finding their way into the supplier networks. It's really shocking, and the subcontracting is bigger than ever. I don't see the subcontracting even being addressed effectively yet by the brands, and that's something that they could be taking all of their production in-house to you know, their main suppliers, if they chose to devote their resources and their attention in that direction.
You tell, at a point in the film, somebody says, you know, if Foxconn improves, more will follow. Do you think that there is that ripple effect? I mean, is, you know, it seems to be, you know, people today talk about fair trade in a way that my parents never would have, and my kids are so much more environmentally friendly than I probably ever was, you know, growing up as a kid and so on. So in a sense, you know, and I believe in social change and I believe in a hopeful future and all that. You know, I guess I'm asking you a couple of questions, but I'm interested to know why and how, if you are still hopeful, how you remain there. But is it getting better, or do you just see a sort of a leveling off that the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, the gap increases, and people continue to use these chemicals that shouldn't be used?
Well, all of that is true. What you just stated. But it's important for us to remain hopeful and believe that change is possible. That's why I felt it was important to end the film on a positive note. And we worked so hard to get our main character, Yi Yeting, to have the opportunity to come out of China for the first time and connect with some of the activists and the global organizations, not just in North America and Europe, but also in the Global South, South Asia, Taiwan, Singapore, et cetera, so that he would realize that there are advocacy groups.
He's not alone.
Yeah, he's not alone, and he's not doing this by himself. I mean, he's paying such a huge personal price in terms of the evictions and the fact that he has leukemia and his factory has never paid the workers' compensation payout that he's entitled to. In part, he thinks as a penalty for the activism that he's engaged in and the fact that he got a number of other workers from his factory who were also poisoned to bring compensation and to win compensation cases against his employer, which is the largest shipping container manufacturer in the world. So we tried so hard for, and finally on the third attempt it worked. He was able to attend our Europe premiere in Geneva, Switzerland. Although we only got a visa for the weekend, so we I don't know if they thought he was going to defect or.
We call that a whistle stop, I believe.
Oh, it was. It was terrible because he was so excited and he was healthy. He went straight from the hospital to the airport. But he was in good shape and had a good flight and got a standing ovation.
Wow, yeah.
At the screening, and it was just...
Well, that must have had an interesting healing kind of factor kind of connected to it, it seems to me.
Yes, absolutely.
Why him? Why him? I mean, China's a big place. What was it that motivated him to say, I'm going to fight back. I've got to say something. I have to do something. And I mean, he really comes out in the film as quite a passionate young man.
He does, and he's not alone among the workers that we met, but we chose him because he actually had a personal connection to all the other workers in the film, which was allowed us to create a narrative arc and to tell a story as opposed to showing a series of vignettes and profiles of different workers, but not really being able to tell a dramatic story about their experiences. So we chose Yi Ting. But one of the things that struck me and impressed me so much about the quality and the caliber of the people that are fighting the system in China is that almost everyone we met that had recovered became active in one way or another with an NGO that had helped them. And the tragedy is that all those groups have been shut down.
Wow.
And while we were there, groups were in the midst of the crackdown, and we had to meet with people outside of their offices. Their offices had been closed. We show one of the NGOs getting trashed in the film with their laptops and their computers being thrown in the street by thugs hired by the government to destroy the activities of these civil society organizations. And these workers, they're kind of at the end of the line. You know, they're not going to work again.
Right.
We had a lot of workers that we don't show in the film who'd lost their hands due to faulty machinery in the factories. That was going to be another thread. But we made the decision that we needed to focus just on the toxic chemicals because that's actually a situation that the companies can address and get those toxic materials out of their facilities within 90 days if they were to make the commitment to do so, whereas a worker injury phenomenon is much more difficult to address. I mean, we even have that here in the West where, you know, we're hearing about factories constantly trying to reduce their injury rates and doing a pretty good job here because of the quality of the laws and the enforcement, et cetera. But we had to focus on the benzene ultimately, but so many of the workers then became activists themselves, and we show one of the young girls going to work in the worker education center once she's better and able to travel outside of the hospital. And then ironically enough, the guy who's running that center, he ends up being arrested by the end of the film. So, you know, these activists and people who were taking a stand and trying to help people connect with resources, they are getting targeted by the government and arrested, and their work is being highly constrained. And right now, we found that none of the groups were willing to even engage with a reporter from one of the UK's largest newspapers a few weeks ago when they wanted to send a crew in and do a nice update and focus on the release of the film, et cetera. But no one was willing to talk because the situation is so sensitive right now. And I don't think having Donald Trump in office and the current relationship with the Chinese government is helping.
Well, you almost have to wonder if some of the decisions that are coming out of the White House are going to, you know, give people license to misbehave in a pretty significant way.
Well, we're seeing it here, and this is the first time that activists in China who were investigating labor practices of a foreign brand with the Ivanka Trump investigation have been arrested.
You said the first time.
Yeah, this is a new development. Sometimes they get kicked out of the factory security guards might say they're reporting them. You know, there might be some kind of a little showdown, but there hasn't been a situation like this before, and I don't think that it bodes well. But I also am seeing it as a culmination of what's been going on over the last several years.
What do you say to somebody who says, "Yeah, but you know, Heather, some work is better than no work."
I don't have a problem with factories being in business, but it's important that they're not breaking the laws of the country where they're operating. The corporations in Canada and the United States are not supposed to be engaging in doing business illegally. If they were subcontracting or doing direct contracting with suppliers in our countries who were using child labor and poisoning workers, there would be quite a bit of sanctions legally that could be brought down upon them. There could be fines, penalties,
sure.
People
yep.
might go to jail. So I'm not really convinced by people saying some job is better than any job, because if the factory can't function at the level where they're able to make a profit while being in compliance with the laws of their own country, then they don't really deserve to be in
right.
business.
Right.
I'm not
not very innovative.
Yes, just obey the laws of your own land.
Yeah, is that too much to ask?
Yeah.
Well, and that's where it gets kind of subtle and nuanced too, doesn't it? Because this is, you know, which is what's so interesting about the first time these Chinese workers have been, these investigators have been arrested. This is what's really interesting about that, and groundbreaking in the sense that there's a, there's patterns, right? What is it that you're hiding? I do a fair bit of work, or have done a fair bit of work in Cambodia over the years, and many of the garment factories that you drive by, you just, wow, what is it you guys are hiding? You know, the gates are closed, barbed wire, no windows, and I'm pretty sure there's no way they're letting me in.
Right, and sometimes they don't even have signs.
So right.
You have trouble if you're trying to find them.
Yeah, and certainly not a branded sign. Certainly not a branded sign.
Right. So, yes, Cambodia definitely has a lot of challenges around labor practices and working conditions. In the case of the China Labor Watch investigation, I understand that they were finding not the most extreme. They weren't finding child labor and prisoners, for example, but they were finding quite a few violations of workplace practices that they were going to report on. And what was supposed to be released either this week or next week. So this is really putting quite a damper
sure.
on the revelations that were supposed to be coming out from the report. I hope they're still in a position to release them regardless, but I think that they want to be able to negotiate first release of the team.
Can we in the West, can we anywhere in the world ever, I'm not sure if this is a fair way to frame the question, but can we ever not be complicit?
Well, I think in the case of consumers, we're just pointing out this issue and making them aware of it, and we're not really pointing the finger at them that they're
right.
complicit, because we're a part of it. But yep. if we know about it and we care and we want to see things done differently, then we can become part of the solution, too,
nice.
And that's what
yeah.
I'm hoping will be achieved with the release of our film.
Do
but the folks that are complicit are the brands.
Well, and it's got to start somewhere, right? The conversation has to start somewhere. The dialogue, the activism has to begin somewhere, and this is part of it, is getting this out. What's the reaction been like?
Well, we've been getting great reviews. I've been very interested that in the media there haven't been any devil's advocates trying to justify the position.
Right.
it's hard to justify leukemia among
a
your
little,
workers.
It's pretty tough, yeah.
Yeah, so we have been getting very positive reviews, and the companies, of course, are quiet. They don't answer emails and have
sure.
not responded to requests for interviews, et cetera. But then in the case of what consumers are doing, we just launched a new petition with the support of one of the people who's been the Indiegogo donor. An individual put a petition up on Care 2 yesterday, and we already have 4,000
wow.
signatures.
Wow, 4,000 in a day.
Yes.
That's something to be hopeful about, be encouraged,
yes.
and be encouraged by.
Absolutely. Well, we all own these devices. We're all owners of smartphones, and to varying degrees, we have them with us.
How much of our daily
lives, you know.
I'm going to probably have to wrap up here in a couple minutes, but love to hear more about what your thoughts are on how do you get consumers, how do you get people's attention about something that is such a part of our everyday lives. Coffee and clothing and devices. I mean, is a label saying this shirt was made by children under the age of 14? Is that gonna stop me from buying it? What's gonna work, Heather?
Well, we're still trying all sorts of potential remedies. I started working on this issue in 1995. Hmm. And the things that I've observed over the years that work has a lot to do with what the companies choose to do, because right. I think it's been fairly well established that consumers are willing with many products to pay pretty much any price that the companies ask.
That's a funny line. That's hilarious. I remember once somebody telling me many, many years ago on a construction site, heavy smoker, yeah, it doesn't matter what they charge for me. I'm going to buy these because I need them. it doesn't matter how much, because cigarettes have always been very expensive here in Canada as a, you know, I'm sure they are in other places around the world too nowadays. But it was really interesting. I need them, so therefore I will pay. But that's a pretty interesting line.
I do think in most cases, especially the things like we're seeing with electronics devices, people are just paying whatever Apple asks
right.
or whatever Samsung is asking. So it doesn't really come down to how expensive the devices are to produce. And that's directly related to the price that consumers are asked to pay. The cost of labor is less than 2% now for the smartphones.
Wow.
And yet still the brands and Foxconn were bringing student interns against their will to the tune of 300,000 of them over the last few years who've been forced to work in their factories. So what we're really seeing is I think it's just the greed of the companies.
Mm.
We've moved a lot of the production of electronics outside of North America. It's gone to Asia, where chemicals that have been banned for 40 years to be used in factory environments here are now being used in these products that are coming back, you know, right back to us in shipping containers that have poisoned the workers, you know, the main character in our film.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great irony that the containers that this stuff that's made with poisons are even made with poison
right.
that is harming the workers and giving them leukemia. So we're in a huge toxic stew at the moment. And I think that we really have to put the pressure on the companies to get us out of it. Because as consumers, these are factories, as you said, they don't have their names on them. They don't want to let us in. You can't go and do any type of citizen visits. It really comes down to the brands negotiating with the suppliers they're working with, saying we're not going to do business with you if you continue to break the law.
Yeah, and now we're talking about we're talking about ethical, we're talking about moral questions, really, aren't we? And sometimes maybe as simple as imposing, yeah, I guess just another level of regulation, right? I mean, it's easy to ignore when it doesn't affect me, right?
Yes, if you're not legally liable as a corporation for what goes on in your supply chain around the world, even if 100% of your products are made overseas and the workers don't get to participate at any level in the profitability of the company, but as long as there are no laws in place in your home country that make you accountable for what happens in the factories where your products are made, then there's really no persuasive argument for corporations to do the right thing. And we're seeing after 20 years that they're not doing the right thing.
Right.
They're still not doing the right thing. Until there are actually laws at home here that are obligating the companies to report and be in compliance with the laws of the country, either here or where they're doing business, then there's not going to be, I think, a universal solution. And that's why I do believe that getting more public sector involvement and legislation and public procurement requirements for the purchasing of electronics devices is the way to go. Because if these public universities and agencies that are buying in the tens of billions
sure.
annually electronics equipment are saying, okay, if you're in violation of these laws and regulations, then we're not going to purchase from you.
Right.
The companies are going to pay attention.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, the sadly money does, I guess, in this case, really talk. I mean, I'd like to think that corporations are, well, they are made up of individuals, that if you were to corner some of these folks and said, would you behave this way outside of the corporation, or will you behave this way outside of the corporation, that they probably wouldn't. But they come under this collective corporate umbrella, and things seem to change. What is it about the ethics between 9 to 5 that's different than what I use at home with my family?
True, and they can operate anonymously.
Yes.
In terms of public scrutiny.
Sure.
And they're also afraid about losing their job.
Right, right. Which is so interesting, because one of your characters in the film, who I believe one of the many millions of migrant workers in China, it's just such a leveling, a human moment where she says, listen, I just want to work. I only want to work. And she's coming into the city and just this, her eyes wide open, you know, mystery, wonder, what am I going to see? And this is what she ends up facing.
Yes, it's not fair. And then that they have to struggle so hard to get their medical costs covered and to get an occupational disease diagnosis, which is the piece of paper that's ultimately so important in order to make the factory
right.
reliable.
You need the diagnosis.
They lose
right.
months and sometimes over a year of treatment while they're arguing with the factory about giving them their ID cards and providing the medical, the employment documentation. In order, sometimes even just the medical reports that might not even have gone to them, but went to the employer. So they're arguing for a year in many cases before they can even begin the necessary chemotherapy that they need to save their lives.
You're off to the Melbourne Doc Film Festival in the near future. You were at the Human Rights Watch Film Festival here in Toronto not that long ago. The website's complicitfilm.org. Can you tell us where we can go and sign this petition?
Yes, there's a link on our website, and also you can go on care2.com/complicit.
Heather, thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it. It's a remarkable film. It's a compelling film. Everyone needs to see it, and I hope they do, and I wish you well with it. And I guess we'll have to stay tuned for an on-demand release or a DVD release as well.
Yes, we'll be in touch, and hopefully it'll be sometime later in 2017 or early 2018.
Well, thanks for adding to the really incredibly important conversation about something that matters a great deal. And speaking truth to power, it's encouraging.
Thank you, David.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.